using a mental health law against school kids, troubled mass transit in South Florida, and trying to light a fire under state medical marijuana rules. Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thousands of times per year, kids under the age of 18 are committed to psychiatric exams against their will. Hundreds of those are initiated at schools. Should school police be allowed to use the Baker Act on school kids? The Wave narrowly survives in Fort Lauderdale. It's a mass transit train project downtown Fort Lauderdale, but costs have soared along with the criticism that it won't serve enough people. In the meantime, Miami-Dade County takes a step to find more money to pay for its public transit hopes. And state regulators responsible for the rules around medical marijuana are under fire for slow-walking something a majority of voters okayed more than a year ago. It's all ahead on the Florida Roundup with your phone calls next. Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. More than 32,000 times between the summers of 2015 and 2016, kids under the age of 18 in Florida were subjected to an involuntary psychiatric exam, almost a 50% increase over 5 years statewide. The Florida Mental Health Act allows a person to be held and assessed if there's reason to believe that person has a mental illness or because of their mental illness. This is what's referred to commonly by the law's nickname, the Baker Act. Now, for minors, that examination has to start within 12 hours of being held at a facility. 2 years ago, more than 700 cases began at public, private, or charter schools in Miami-Dade County. More than 600 were initiated at schools in Broward County. Now, not all of these were at public schools. And the use of the act by public school police has gone down in recent years as officers receive more training on the law. But the use of the Baker Act by schools and school police has come under new scrutiny with social media video out recently taken by the mother of a 7-year-old as he was taken into custody by school police in handcuffs and Baker acted, according to his mom. A Miami-Dade school says the district police now have to get the approval from a lieutenant or higher-ranking officer before a student is taken for a psychiatric evaluation against their will. Should school police be allowed to use the Baker Act in Florida on school kids? And if so, how? Marsha from Pompano Beach sent us this text. I would say it can only be used with parental consent or with the decision of a judge. There has to be more than one adult opinion to send a kid into that. Lawrence said only in extreme cases with two people present. Jonathan from Lauderdale Manors says it's better than an arrest. And Ellen in Cooper City sent us this note. Yes, if they pose a danger to themselves or others. So this is where we begin this week here on the Florida Roundup. Give us a call. Your thoughts, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. You can also send us a tweet using our handle at WLRN or find us on Facebook as well. The three editorial page editors of the South Florida newspapers and electronic media organizations are with us. Nancy Ankrum heads that up with our partner, the Miami Herald. Rosemary O'Hara does the same at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And Rick Christie is with us from Boynton Beach. He's the editorial page editor at the Palm Beach Post. All three of you, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Great to have you here. Nancy, this report from the state was dated in November. It got new publicity in the last week or so. And then, of course, this social media Facebook video from this mom surfaced with her 7-year-old son in handcuffs being led away and into a mental health facility by school police. What are your thoughts about what we saw here?
My thoughts are that Baker acting children on taking them out of school and taking them out of school in handcuffs should be the rare exception.
Nancy, we're going to fix your microphone. We have a quick moment here on this.
Oh, okay.
Rosemary, how about you? What were your thoughts as you read about this and saw this?
Well, when I learned about the uptick in the number of students who are being Baker acted in schools, I mean, the first reaction is it seems like there's something going on here. There's a new trend. It reminded me of a couple years ago when we were having a similar conversation about kids being handcuffed and arrested for bad behavior. And in that response, we saw we don't want kids to have arrest records.
Right.
We want to give them civil citations. So I find it surprising that there's been this uptick in the number of children who are now being Baker acted. On the one hand, I have to feel it's hard without walking a mile in the shoes of a teacher. And so much is being asked of our public schools these days. It's hard to know what's happening exactly here because the schools can't talk about it. The laws on privacy say they can't tell the story.
Right.
But and on the other hand, you do want parents. Parents have a role too. They need to send their kids to school ready to learn. But, you know, I don't know. I think that there needs to be a real examination of what's going on here. Do these kids really need this help? Or is it an overreaction to what used to get kids sent to the principal's office?
Well, certainly, Rick Christie of the Palm Beach Post, that is common questions being asked here. Are police officers or teachers, for that matter, or other school personnel, either public schools, private schools, or charter schools, overreacting when they come up with a student that is exhibiting bad behavior? Or is it the ability to judge whether or not this minor is a danger to him or herself, or perhaps exhibiting a psychotic episode? Rick, can you hear us? We're going to get connected to Palm Beach in a moment, but go ahead, Nancy.
You know, I think that Baker acting, the students should be the rare exception. I think that the problem here is that not every player in the scenario is on the same page, working off with the same information. Mm-hmm. Parents may know that their child has a behavior problem. Teachers who have long know that a certain child has a history of bad behavior, maybe for mental illness, maybe because of some sort of special needs.
Right.
The police might not know that and comes in and does what policemen do.
Right. Try to control the situation
exactly,
immediately and
exactly.
use all the different types of tools that they've been trained to do. In the case of Miami-Dade, I've had a source say, you know, in the last several years, Miami-Dade County Public School police officers have received training on assessing a child, understanding the guidelines of the Baker Act and what is necessary to invoke that act, a minor or an adult for that matter.
Right. No, and teachers, though, have not.
That's right.
No teacher should be hit by a child or by one of their students, should be hit, wailed on, beat upon. I think that's a non-starter. However, I think each student demands having a record, a portfolio of what the problem just might be.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of parents who are in denial. There are a lot of parents who are saying, well, there's nothing wrong with my child.
Mm-hmm.
but it's such a traumatizing event
yeah.
for a child of the ages that we're talking about that everyone needs to work together to prevent that.
Yeah, and if you saw the social media video, the Facebook video, as you watch it and you know the fate of the child, according to the mother, was the child was being led away into a facility to be evaluated against his or her will. But it was a 7-year-old child with his hands behind his back, handcuffed, being led by the shoulder by a police officer. Watching the video, Rosemary, knowing that the child was being taken for this evaluation is one thing. But then seeing the 7-year-old in handcuffs is quite a striking visual statement, to see a child that age with the school shirt on being led into the facility with his arms behind his back. More texts coming in from listeners. Linda in Fort Lauderdale saying, it depends. Usually Baker acting is used as a last resort when there is a total lack of control for an individual or a danger to themselves or others. Circumstances would have to get investigated. Teresita from unincorporated Miami-Dade says only with the consent of a parent would she support Baker acting a student. Ellie from Miami Beach does not support it, saying because a police officer does not have the capacity to determine whether or not a child needs to be Baker acted, that should be the decision of a mental health professional. In fact, the police officers, at least in Miami-Dade County, do receive some training on the act.
They do receive some training. And Miami-Dade Public Schools recently instituted a new method of doing this where a higher up, like a lieutenant in the school police force, has to sign off on Baker acting a child. I think that brings new concerns. I think that we would have to look very closely at disparities. We already see disparities in what Rosemary was talking about in terms of young children who are arrested for acting out. If they're black, they are handcuffed and taken to the police station. If they are not black, if they are white, possibly Hispanic, they are not, and it is dealt with in the school and with the parents. I can't imagine, though I would like to, I can't imagine we might not see some of that same dynamic happening here, even with this very moderate fix
of kicking it up to
of having
lieutenant.
A higher ranking officer help make a call.
Exactly.
The racial question is a question that Tanya in West Palm Beach has as well. Tanya, thank you for calling in. You're on the Florida Roundup. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. You did start to talk about my question, which is the ethnicity of these children. I'm wondering if they have any stats on that, on you know, what are the ethnicity of these children that ultimately Baker Act is.
Tanya got it, asking about any racial breakdown or ethnic breakdown. As I looked, Nancy and Rick and Rosemary, at the state report, it breaks it down by certain age groups, 0 to 5 years old, 5 to 8 years old, and those kinds of things. I did not see initially any racial breakdown, mm-hmm. and I haven't seen any reporting around that. But certainly, Nancy, to your point, and Rosemary, I'd like to hear your thoughts. Certainly is a natural question, certainly in this community.
Now that our eyes have been opened, let's look at what's going on here. If there is disparity, let us know. But, you know, the Baker Act is supposed to be used if somebody is a threat to himself or to others. And it's hard to believe these little kids, even when they're punching and kicking, are putting somebody else's life in danger. That said, that is not normal behavior.
Right.
And something, this child might need help that he is not now getting. So let us use this as a way to examine, you know, what's happening with our kids, especially those who are acting out in the most extreme ways. What kind of help do they get after they've been Baker-acted? You know, oftentimes you just get released and there is no follow-up.
Florida does not have a good history about investment in mental health by any stretch of the imagination. We want to talk a bit more about ethnicity and race here. Gladys is joining us in Miami. Gladys, you're on the phone. Hello. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. I'm a 30-year veteran in law enforcement, and the criteria is pretty clear as far as Baker acting. If the child poses a danger to himself or others, that's what it is. And, you know, in my 30 years, I've never, ever had ethnicity play a role in who I Baker act and who I don't.
Gladys, also, as a police officer with that criteria, a danger to him or herself or others, how do you judge that for somebody who may be 60 pounds and 4 feet tall?
Well, let me tell you something. Nowadays, a gun is an equalizer. There are children that are you know, taking guns to school now, knives to school, and I don't care if you weigh 60 pounds or not. If
sure.
some of these kids are found to be armed, you know, you've got a situation.
Oh, sure, that's the possession of a deadly weapon. I mean, is in that instance though, Gladys? I mean, as a police officer, are you thinking Baker Act in the case of a minor with a deadly weapon that you're presented with?
No. I'm just saying that there's extremes, of course, but. You know, the 60 pounds, I don't know, but you have to be there. You have to be in the situation to see what this child is doing. Is he choking out another kid? Is he, you know, beating up on the teacher, a frail elderly teacher? You don't know. You just don't know. You have to be there.
True.
You have to literally be there and witness it. That's the other thing. You have to witness it.
Gladys, we appreciate the phone call. Thank you for joining us here on the Florida Roundup. Let's talk to Michael in Miami. He's been holding on. Michael, you are on the Florida Roundup. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, sir. So my deepest concern with Baker acting of the children is that this becomes an introduction for them into institutionalism. And it is a frightening fact, but our current social media environment and the pop culture almost praises and has a certain credibility towards that institutionalism, which young, especially, you know, minority males, which I identify as, and that's my deepest concern.
So your concern is about the institutionalization of kids, beginning with this kind of Baker Act, but also the attractiveness of that? Is that what you're saying?
In a way, yes, sir. If you have lived within those communities and experienced these kind of interactions which occur in the social hierarchies, if you will, within the streets, really, it is praised, this, you know, kind of bad behavior and such. And so I'm afraid that, you know, these children who are being baked or acted, they come back to school and it's, oh, hey, that was cool, you know, and it introduces them into institutionalism and it gears them in that direction and sets them up for the wrong things in life.
Michael, we appreciate your phone call and your input. 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. We are talking about some new criticism, a new look, for that matter, at the use of the Florida Mental Health Act, the Baker Act, against minor school kids in Florida. More than 32,000 times it had been used between the summers of 2015 and 2016 to Florida kids under the age of 18, a almost 50% increase over 5 years, although the amount of time that public school police have been using it in recent years has been dropping off. Rick Christie from the Palm Beach Post, we've been able to make connection here with you. How do you see this? What's the lens that you're looking at?
Well, I guess the lens for me is basically one of just being careful with how far we're taking this. I think I heard your previous speakers say that there's a concern here with using this too often against kids, poorer kids, kids of color, and stigmatizing them. And I'd have to agree with that. That basically that's where we have to be careful in using this. And the numbers that you cited earlier sound pretty high, but I don't know if they're less than they have been in previous years or not. But I think too often that with things like this and disciplinary things like this, they tend to lean heavy or come down harder on poorer kids and kids of color.
Talking about the use of the Baker Act with minors in the state of Florida, it is legal. Minors can be Baker acted as an involuntary detainment, essentially, for a mental health evaluation up to 72 hours. The law provides that examination has to begin within 12 hours of a minor being held at a facility. Your phone calls at 800-743-9576. Rick Christie is along with us from the Palm Beach Post, Rosemary O'Hara from the Sun Sentinel, and Nancy Ankrum from our partner, the Miami Herald. All three of them have essentially the same professional title, that is the editor of their various media organizations' editorial pages. Nancy Ankrum, your thoughts.
You know, I wanted to also say that the Baker Acting Children is really a continuation of how the state of Florida really mishandles the treatment of people, no matter their age, with mental illness. And what we see increasingly is our jails becoming the de facto treatment centers for people who are mentally ill. Now, in Miami-Dade, we have a very committed longtime judge, Judge Steve Lifeman. I talk to him quite often on this issue, who has really made inroads locally and statewide in how we treat mentally ill, how we evaluate and treat mentally ill defendants.
And how the judicial system deals with them.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And there is a new treatment center coming online that has been approved to deal with that specific issue. But we don't do a good job statewide in handling the mentally ill.
Rosemary, right. That's been a history for a good long time here in Florida.
We are, I think, third in from the bottom in our funding of mental health. Back on the schools issue, I think the school's response now that there's been this flashpoint, our eyes have opened and people are concerned about what they're seeing. It's really incumbent on the school systems to come forward and say, what are they facing? You know, I'd be curious to know when a child acts out, what is the process? You know, do they, if they start hitting the teacher, is the first thing to call the police? What is the process that they use? Because it wasn't so long ago, zero tolerance was in our schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, my goodness, somebody tore a piece of bread into the shape of a pistol and some little kid, you know, gets expelled from school for having that piece of bread. So is there a zero tolerance for acting out? Is there a stepped procedure? And maybe if the public better understood the challenges that the schools have with behavioral issues, how they're dealing with it, and what they need help with in order to deal with it, something good would come from all of this.
The spectrum of behavior from kids in classrooms and playgrounds and recess and art classrooms and you name it, and how teachers are trained to deal with that, how police officers are trained to deal with that. Miami-Dade County Public Schools, we know, has changed its procedure slightly, and we've also learned that there are some other recommendations that are undergoing legal review that aren't ready to be publicly released yet. But what do you think here? Should school police be allowed to use the Baker Act on school kids? Kyle from Brickell sent us this text. No, because I doubt school police are trained well enough to handle this type of evaluation. School police in Dade County do, though, however, receive some kind of training. We can report that. James in Miami Beach, no, police should not be the arbiters. That should be left to teachers and or school administrators to determine whether it's necessary or prudent. And Katie sent us this note. They should not. Police and teachers are not medical professionals, she wrote us. Your voice can be added here at 800-743-9576. Let's go to Margo on line 5 in Miami Beach. Margo, thank you for holding on. You are on the radio. Welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Yeah, I was Baker Acted 3 times. The first time was right after I had a brain aneurysm and I was in the hospital for a month, and I was Baker Acted by my mother, who had dementia. I had been taking care of her for 4 years prior to that. And after I got better, I continued to take care of her, but even while I was gone for a month, the reason I was Baker Acted was, one, after my aneurysm, and I was in the hospital. For 2 weeks, they didn't even give me any medication because I had prior been on Lexapro. Mm-hmm. After I got out of the hospital, I had no money, and I had no... they were working on my disability case, but I still didn't have any money to get any medication. So I was very depressed, yes, after my aneurysm mm-hmm. and after I got out of the hospital. My mother didn't know what to do, and so she called the police. And, of course, if she had called 911, it would have been a different situation. Yeah. But yeah. The fact that she called the police, I was Baker Acted. Mm-hmm. And I was there for 9 days in a Baker Acted facility. I think this is a terrible, terrible thing to do to children, to kids. I mean, there's got to be a better way. We've got to, you know, if we're going to use that money to Baker Act them, we should use that money to do something else with that money for these kids and get them the care that they need. These kids some of them come from terrible situations, from horrible, homes and stuff. And they should be nurtured rather than criminalized. Mm. And this is a stigma that they will carry forever. Mm. And the man that was talked before about, you know, the fact that these kids can end up, you know, being criminals or getting criminalized is true. I think it could possibly happen to them if they don't get the proper care and help.
Margo, we appreciate your perspective. How are you doing now?
Oh, I'm doing much better. I mean, you know, my aneurysm was 203, and, you know, I'm fine now. I got better after 2 years, and I continued to take care of my mother. And my mother got sicker. She finally got full-blown aneurysm, Alzheimer's. And, you know, I would have to take her myself on the bus in a wheelchair. Yeah. You know, this is what I had to go through.
I'm sorry to hear.
I got help.
Margo, we
and
got
I
a lot more calls.
Well,
I'm glad you got help. I'm sorry to hear about Mom's condition as well, but thank you for sharing your perspective with us.
I want these kids to be okay. I want these kids to be okay.
Got it. Margo, they're joining us from Miami Beach. Let's continue in Miami-Dade County, where Richard is on line 3. I've been holding on. Richard, hi, you are on the Florida Roundup. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom. Yes, I was calling mainly to, you know, let everyone know. I worked at a crisis unit for about 10 years. And, yes, it is a terrible situation for a minor or anyone to be involved in. It is a life-defining situation. But the majority of children that were Baker-acted, they were actually coming from their house. They were Baker-acted by their parents due to the fact that they couldn't handle them. Some of them were aggressive. Some of them were putting themselves in danger because they were running away. They were going out with adults. They were using drugs. Obviously, some of them will come from school.
Yep.
And at times, especially in the summer, we will receive, children that we pretty much raised there. You know, these are children that, especially in the summer, we already knew that Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we were receiving some of the kids that we already knew, because the parents, one, either could not handle them, or two, they needed a daycare. They yep. needed a daycare for them, and they knew exactly what to say in order for their children to be bake-racked.
Richard, that's an important perspective for us. Let's pick it up there, Richard. We appreciate that. The data, Rick and Nancy and Rosemary, shows this overall increase in minors, kids under the age of 17 in Florida, teenagers and kids being having the Baker Act initiated against them. But we've seen, and public schools is a flashpoint for this, of course, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Not only yes. because of the public dollars involved, but the sheer size of our public school institutions here in South Florida, having three of the largest in the country in our listening area, Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County, Rick. It's a flashpoint, but some of the school data and the school police usage of the Baker Act, at least in Dade County, has actually gone down as the police force has gotten more training. So, to Richard's point, these kids who are being Baker Acted are oftentimes having this initiated against them in places much different than just public school grounds.
People, yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say, I think that goes to Nancy's larger point about Florida's lack of spending regarding mental health. And the state is woefully behind on that, and as she said, our county jails are really our largest mental health facilities yeah. now, and it's probably even worse for juveniles who are not being treated properly in a lot of the homes that are visited by our social workers. And Florida does need to spend far more money than it does on mental health issues.
Rosemary?
In my experience, and I do have personal experience with this with a member of my family, people use the Baker Act out of desperation when they don't know what else to do. Somebody is out of control, and you can't reason with them. You can't. And so, what help is there for families? And I would suspect, I would hope that what's happening in the schools is probably that similar kind of desperation of what can I do? And then the issue, as I learned in my own family, is that once they're released, once they can say that they're not a danger to themselves or someone else, they are just let go. And if they don't have the money, as Margot mentioned, there's no follow-up treatment. And so the cycle that your other caller mentioned just continues. And maybe some of these who are being Baker-acted are repeat people out of the school. We really need to look at, once a kid has been flagged as having such severe emotional disturbances that they require this kind of intervention, what then happens? Right. What are we doing?
We had a caller ask off the air, what happens to the kids later on in life?
Right, exactly. What I see is and something that the woman who spent 30 years in law enforcement who called in really mm-hmm. sticks with me. And she said, you have to see it.
Yeah.
What I sense, though, is just a lack of empathy and understanding of what real people go through on the ground from our state government. And clearly, state government is not the only answer here. But let's look at what we're doing. This is going on in public schools. This is going on in schools. But we continue to underfund public schools. We continue to really do a crappy job of taking care of mental illness.
And then, for instance, the ratio of school counselors
Absolutely.
To school kids at the elementary level, or even at the middle school level, or the high school level, for that matter.
Right, absolutely. Police training, not school police training, but police training in handling mentally ill, I don't want to say suspects, but but who get called
citizens,
because
people.
They're acting, yeah. Right. You know, it's patchy as yeah. to whether they get training.
To that
or
point,
not.
We've got from Delray Beach, Ray is on the telephone. Ray, you have told our producer your brother is a police officer in Miami?
Yes, he is a police officer in the city of Miami.
And you're a paramedic, is that right?
Yes, from New York. I'm retired now, down here living in South Florida. Yeah.
Gotcha. So you're not a practicing paramedic, so to speak, but what's your brother's experience that you can share with us?
He's been a police officer in the city of Miami for maybe 4 to 5 years now, just about. You know, he deals with a lot of Baker Acts throughout his time, you know, serving in the city of Miami. My thing is, like, we've had a discussion about this before, especially with young children, and it's funny that, you know, I'm flipping through the radio station on your station here, and this is a great discussion, but a lot of these police officers, not to take anything away from these guys, because they work very hard and they're very well trained, a lot of them, unfortunately, just, you know, they're starting off in the police force with not a lot of experience and just a high school diploma. They just don't, you know, it really takes, you know, to Baker Act a young child who's developing and doesn't really have the mental capacity to make, you know, decisions for themselves. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that, you know, a lot of these police officers who are, you know, who just have high school diplomas are medically capable of you know, helping these children out or just Baker Acting them, just kind of shunning them away. It just, they just don't have that experience, you know, and it's just unfortunate. I just, you know, I don't know if it has to do with the police force. Maybe they need a year or two of college and maybe just kind of have a little bit more experience. But I think at the end of the day, it really has to rely on fire rescue, you know, nurses and people, you know, doctors and things of that sort. It really needs to stay on the side of the healthcare side, not really law enforcement.
Ray, we appreciate your perspective. Thanks for calling in. Glad you found us here at WLRN. Ray from Delray Beach. Mary has been holding on line 8. Mary, thank you for your patience. Your perspective on this. Go ahead.
Yeah, as someone who worked briefly, recently at an R-Kids, Miami-Dade County R-Kids agency, I would bet that 90% of the children that are in and out of the system, there are many things that could be said about the Baker Act, and there was good intent with the creation of the Baker Act, but that has to work in tandem with a great, responsible mental health system that we completely lack. Right. But right now, what's currently happening with the Baker Act is that I would bet, if research was done, that 90% of the children that are, or the 90% of the people being Baker Acted are children, and children in the system, in the foster care system, because this has become the de facto tool to deal with children with problems. And I've actually witnessed a child who could have easily, I had the child calm, but the social workers, they're tired, they all have mission fatigue, and they are completely jaded by the system. And so their de facto tool is Baker Act. And we have healthcare professionals going ahead and signing these orders when I witnessed 5 Miami police officers coming on the scene to take away a child who had really done nothing. Mm. And they had to take her. They reluctantly had to take her. And this is the problem that I guarantee, whether you speak to folks on the police force, whether it's City of Miami Police, Metro-Dade, Dade County, whichever agency you speak to, they know it. But this becomes, by the wave of a pen, the child is taken away.
Yeah.
And this is the problem. And it's a drained system, because the social work system is also overwhelmed. So we are completely underfunded in everything, mental health, child welfare, and this is the crux of this problem.
Mary, we appreciate your perspective. Thank you for sharing it with us and holding on to the panel here, to Rick and Nancy and to Rosemary. She brings up an interesting point. We were talking earlier about a racial and ethnic breakdown of these kids who are having the Baker Act invoked against them, but a breakdown of kids who are the types of households that they're coming from, for instance. Is it a foster care home or a type of household? That would be really elucidating data to get.
Right, and that speaks to the point she made and the point that I made earlier of how we are really sucking dry all of the services, all of the organizations and agencies that really play a role in a troubled family's life.
Yeah.
And it's not just mental illness, but it's violence within the family, it's drug use within the family, mental illness of a child, or an undiagnosed condition, mm-hmm. such as autism, mm-hmm. or Asperger's, mm-hmm. are just going unnoticed. Mm.
You know, I think given the revelations in here and the challenges facing the schools, I wonder about whether we shouldn't see a return to the school nurse. You know, we've got school security, police officers at schools. If there were a part of the outrage about this incident, as we were saying earlier, was that this little boy was hauled off in handcuffs.
That's right.
It was a legal law enforcement response, and the handcuffs just seems like an overreaction. But again, so if we know that kids today, so many seem to have challenges and have these IEPs, these individual educational plans, mm-hmm. that suggest that there's disability in here. Perhaps the institution of the school nurse would be a place that would offer not just a timeout, but a medical set of eyes on these kids before an extreme reaction is taken.
Well, to Ray and Delray Beach's point, where his brother, who's in law enforcement, talked about having more health professionals involved at the point of contact as opposed to law enforcement involved at the point of contact. Perhaps that could go there. We got a lot more topics to get to here. Our apologies to the callers who are on the line. That conversation can continue on our Facebook page and also on Twitter. Look for us there. Here on the radio, we next have to tackle public transit. Some steps forward this week, believe it or not, to try to get South Florida moving again. That's coming up next as the roundup continues. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Thanks again for listening this week. This was the week that the wave was saved and Miami-Dade moved to find more money to get the county going again in Brightline. Well, a train hit another pedestrian. The train service says, according to witnesses, a man laid down between the tracks as a train approached Thursday night. Brightline calls it an intentional act. His injuries were not life-threatening. This is the week, though, that the long effort to get South Florida moving again took a couple of steps forward. First, the Fort Lauderdale Commission narrowly approved moving ahead with the WAVE project. That's a downtown streetcar project that's seen its price tag go up way above expectations. And Miami-Dade commissioners voted to create a new property tax district with some of the money dedicated to building out 6 transit corridors. So are these the ideas that will get South Florida moving again? Miami was recently ranked as having the 5th worst traffic in the nation. We spend more than 60 hours a year stuck in congestion. 60 hours in traffic. Now, admittedly, in radio, that's not such a bad thing. Being stuck in traffic and listening to the radio station can be good for business here. But still, South Florida needs to get going again. So do you support diverting your tax money to transit? How about it? 800-743-WLRN. Rosemary O'Hare, the editorial page editor at the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. Rick Christie is along with us in that same capacity at the Palm Beach Post. Nancy Ankrum holds down those duties at our partner, the Miami Herald. So let's begin with the wave, Rosemary. The price tag of this thing has just continued to balloon, and Fort Lauderdale faced a deadline that it was going to lose out on about $10 million of federal grants if it didn't take this vote by Friday. And boy, a tight vote. It was a squeezer, 3-2, but the wave survives to live another day.
Right. It was tight both at the City Commission and it was tight at the Broward County Commission. And at the City Commission, those who are running for election on March 13th have all said that they would vote to undo the wave. The wave is a 2.8-mile streetcar loop near downtown that is not designed to take traffic off the road. It is absolutely an economic development tool, an amenity for downtown. But when we talk about transit and taxing ourselves for transit, the wave is not going to, it was, a lot of people think, boy, if we were to start over again, this is not where we would start. But that Broward had $130 million in federal and state money, plus a lot of local money, was just too much to give up. And so the outgoing city commission voted by one vote, you know, margin to keep pressing ahead on a rush job after 14 years. And we'll see what happens when the new commission comes in.
A lot of these plans, Nancy, including in Dade County with the SMART plan and the six transit corridors, are plans that gathered dust for a good number of years, like the streetcar plan, Rosemary, that you describe in downtown Fort Lauderdale, the six transit corridors that are identified in the SMART plan to build out Metro Rail to the tune of several billion dollars are plans that in some cases date back 15, 20 plus years.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And we've been writing about it for about that long. And I think our next editorial
is going
to basically say, just do something.
Just do something. Yes, those plans do go very far back. And the cities have so changed around them.
Yeah.
They have grown in population, yet public transportation has remained inadequate. And now we have a younger population moving into South Florida that doesn't even want to own cars, and they want effective public transportation.
And this week, the commission and its supporters on public transportation took that step to create these tax increment financing districts around these six transit corridors to try to encourage the kind of density development that's necessary for train lines, certainly, but also to, frankly, generate the dollars that it's going to take to build it out.
Exactly.
But that means draining those resources away from other places like police and fire and parks and other types of municipal systems that would have their hands in those property tax dollars.
You know, we have met off and on with U.S. Representative Mario Diaz-Balart, who says to Miami-Dade, bring me a plan so I
singularly.
Can yes yeah. please yes together yeah. speaking with one voice
yeah.
to so and I can probably get some federal dollars for whatever you want to
do. And he is the chairman of the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Transportation. So if you've got a federal transportation a budget request, it's going through his committee first in Washington, D.C.
He is our friend here.
Yeah. And Rick Christie in Palm Beach County, meantime, you're looking at all of these efforts. Rail is not under consideration, certainly, but the patchwork of public transport certainly has not spared Palm Beach County.
No, it hasn't. And I think that generally there is a lot of taxpayer support for public transportation in Palm Beach County. I don't think our traffic problems have gotten as bad as they are in Broward and Miami-Dade yet. I think that a bigger issue here is that we have a cultural problem with mass transit in South Florida, and in that people don't want to give up their cars.
Yeah.
They'll sit on I-95 for an hour, complain, and watch the tri-rail go by, but they won't get on the tri-rail train, and we've even seen that with the Brightline train, mm-hmm. where is another example. That's private money, and still, you know, again, it's facing some issues, and I've said this in a column when they first launched, that what they are facing, the biggest issue that they will really be facing is a cultural bias against mass transit in South Florida, because we love our cars.
Yeah, sure. What comes first, the bus or the automobile? That's the chicken and the egg argument here, right? The rail car or the Uber, so to speak, Rosemary?
Yeah.
Part of the reason that people have lost trust, though, or the reason is that what we're doing now has not lived up to the promise.
That's right.
You know, the
mm-hmm.
buses aren't very clean in Broward. We've got a problem with bad drivers who very little happens to them when they haven't their wrecks. They're not clean. I know in Miami-Dade that people agreed to tax themselves in order to expand Metro Rail, and that didn't happen. And so now you want us to tax ourselves again for something. Why should we believe you when it doesn't happen?
Right, absolutely. Rosemary's right. The People's Transportation Plan was sold as this is going to be the silver bullet, and the money was diverted for, you know, for transportation,
for maintenance
supplies,
and operations. It was supposed to be for capital projects,
absolutely,
which is a fancy way of saying new rail.
Gloves
that was
for
in
bus drivers.
2002. It was a half penny sales tax in Dade County, and you see it. For those who do ride the buses, you will see that emblem on many buses right outside the door saying help paid for by the half penny sales tax.
Right.
That was sold way back when as new investment, not current investment. And now, Nancy, there's talk of going for that other half penny.
Exactly. They're going to have to make an awfully good case because the mistrust is high and deservedly so.
Jay is in Miami on line one. Jay, thank you for calling into the Florida Roundup. Your thoughts?
Yeah, just basically echoing what the last caller mentioned. But aside from that, aside from them not fulfilling their promises back in like 01 or 02, didn't we have a surplus in our budget because of the amount of tolls that they've been implementing?
The MDX tolls, the Miami-Dade Tollway Authority, Expressway Authority.
Popping up all over the place, and they've been going up incrementally, I mean, year after year. Not only the amount, but the cost for, you know, every time you go through them, but the amount that they are in South Florida.
Sure, they offer refunds, as a matter of fact. But Jay, separate agency altogether, not the same agency that runs the trains and the buses in Dade County. Separate agency altogether, different budget, different governance, and different resources as well. So, you know, as this community is now tied together with the Bright Line, is this a new era of public transit or transit, of mass transit? Is it a new era on governance of mass transit, Rick?
Well, I think so. And I sure hope so, so that we can get some of these cars off the road and everything and reduce some of our stress. I think that there are some folks who have been looking forward to it and everything. But again, it hasn't been getting, I don't believe it's been getting the ridership that it has expected to this point, and that's going to be kind of tough.
Yeah, we've seen demand on the buses, for instance, to Dade County go down. But I tell you, as a common Metro Rail rider, personally, I will tell you, it is cheek to jowl on those trains
frequently. Tom, I think you guys pointed to earlier is that if anything is going to probably save it, it will be the millennials who actually honestly, you're right. They don't want to purchase cars or have to drive cars everywhere, which is one of the reasons why Uber is so popular and everything. And the fact that it will be running through urban areas, which is where a lot of millennials want to move back to.
Into the downtown areas. Let me get Nancy Anderson here for her comments.
You know, I think Brightline will work well here because it will come right into the Metro Station, Government Center Metro Station.
In Miami,
from which people can then branch out to where they need to go. But again, transportation needs to be seamless for people to take it.
Yeah.
And if people are confronted in other locations with that first mile, last mile problem of, well, here, I took Brightline, pat me on the back. Now, how do I get to where I need to go downtown or out west?
Yeah.
Then, again, it's going to be problematic.
Rosemary?
I fear that the wave is not going to have the ridership that everybody is predicting, and that it will give, you know, rail a black eye. But I cannot wait for Brightline to extend to Miami and to Orlando. We came down for a concert the other night from Fort Lauderdale, an hour and a half to get here. Brightline also is trying to get a stop at Fort Lauderdale International Airport.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to create a new way for more people to use Fort Lauderdale Airport as a way to get from here to there.
Let me sneak in one more call in Broward County. Rachel is on line one in Davie. Rachel, thank you. Your thoughts. You're on the radio.
Hi there. So I moved to South Florida about a year and a half ago, and when we looked at the maps and we looked at how all of the buildings are conglomerated, we thought we'll have great public access to transportation. And we really didn't want to buy a car. And it took us about 3 months of trying to ride the bus, even directly to downtown on these main veins of Broward and that we realized there'd be no way that we would be able to live here without purchasing a vehicle. So it just, it's a matter of how much time we're willing to spend to get from point A to point B. And in the end, we had to purchase vehicles just to do basic things like get groceries and go downtown.
Rachel, thank you for sharing your perspective. As a 8-year veteran now of South Florida, one of the first acts that we had to do as a family was to buy a second car in South Florida as well. Rachel, I remember those days very kindly. Listen, big thanks to our trio of editorial page editors here from South Florida. Always great to have all three of you on. Rick Christie is with us from Boynton Beach, the editorial page editor at the Palm Beach Post. Rosemary O'Hara, who braved I-95 today to be with us in studio in Miami, the editorial page editor for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Nancy Ankrum, the editorial page editor for our partner, the Miami Herald. Thanks to all three of you for joining us on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Finally on the Roundup this hour, he's back.
And number three, Wade.
Dwayne Wade is back in a Miami Heat uniform. 2 years after leaving Wade, he's back in Wade County. He's leaving the Cleveland Cavaliers, who had the oldest average age of any NBA franchise, an average that clearly was pushed up by Wade's 36 years. The Heat's average age is a full decade younger. So beyond his three Heat championships, MVP, and scoring titles, after a couple of Midwestern winters, who wouldn't want to retire in Miami? That will do it for the Florida Roundup today. It is produced by Bridget O'Brien and Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontato, our digital director. News director is Terrence Shepard. WLRN's program director is Peter Mertz. And our technical supervisor is Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, and thanks for listening.